This is Liz Siegert, one of the co-producers of HealthCetera. As we live longer with more and more chronic conditions, some of us may end up homebound, unable to get to our primary providers for even routine health care. That means this population either goes without care or ends up in emergency rooms or nursing homes, driving up costs and further reducing quality of life. There are programs and services that deliver home-based primary care, but they face looming cuts in reimbursement thanks to the Senate's latest health care bill. It slashes Medicaid by as much as $800 billion. Dennis Tarrant, a nurse practitioner in New York City, runs a home-based primary care practice. He thinks nurse practitioners could be a solution to the nationwide shortage of primary care providers, but says it's getting harder and harder to serve his patients.
Tell me a little bit about your practice and how that meets some of those needs.
Sure. So essentially, I'm a nurse practitioner in New York, and I started a practice called Manhattan House Calls. And Manhattan House Calls essentially is a medical house call program that we provide primary care for patients in their homes, regardless of age, essentially due to their debility, being unable to access outside healthcare. Either be it in an office or in an urgent care center, our patients typically have great difficulty getting out, and they don't really have access to primary care simply because of their disabilities. So we provide their primary care in the home.
So is there sort of a typical patient? Do you mostly see homebound elderly? Does it cover a range of patients?
You know, I would say that's about 90% of our patients are elderly over the age of 80, 85. We do have some patients that are younger. They have morbid obesity. They have MS. A host of different reasons of why some of these folks can't get out. Some of them might be in their 40s or 50s, but they're paralyzed from the neck down, and they live maybe two or three stories in a walk-up, and they don't have access to primary care, so we'll provide the care for them.
For people that may not be aware, how does that differ from a primary care MD?
You know, it's all in the training. The training is different on both levels. I guess can't speak for a physician level of training because I'm not a physician. But with a nurse practitioner, we're held to basically the same ethical and legal standards of a physician. We prescribe, we diagnose, treat patients the same as you would expect from an internist. And in New York, we're allowed to operate independently, meaning that there is no written agreement between a nurse practitioner and a physician so that the nurse practitioner can be independent. So we see patients independently of physicians. You know, of course, we refer out to specialists when need be, just like you would expect from, say, a primary care doctor. But generally, we're, again, held to a lot of the same standards as you would see from a physician. And there's a handful of things that we can do that we cannot do that a physician can do, namely home health care, which is a federal law that nurse practitioners can't certify patients for home health if they need a visiting nurse, if they need a home attendant, under Medicare. Or it's under a private home health agency, we can. But for Medicare reimbursement, we cannot certify patients for home care. And currently, we're also working on being able to certify patients for end-of-life decisions like do not resuscitate orders, MOLST forms, those kinds of things, which actually did pass both houses. And, you know, I believe it's going to go to the governor and, you know, hopefully he'll sign it.
It's not only in New York, but throughout the country, there's a shortage of qualified primary care providers, whether they're NPs or MDs. So you're really providing a service to people that might otherwise have to go into a nursing home.
Yeah, I mean, the shortfall of primary care physicians over the next 3 to 5 years, 2020, 2025, is massive. While there's only going to be an 8% increase in physicians produced, there's going to be a 15 to 20% demand. And right now, we just don't have the ability to meet the demands of primary care in this country unless we do offer and allow nurse practitioners to provide more independent care. I suppose the nurse practitioner numbers, graduation rates, are year over year higher each time. So it really is sort of a very nice option if we want to be able to expand and keep up with the needs of society.
And you're based in Manhattan, which is heavily urban. For people that may not be familiar, there are a lot of multi-level apartment buildings that don't have elevators, so it's very important that you get to these people.
Correct. And a lot of the buildings that the doctors are located in are accessible only via a staircase. Or trying to get from one part of town to the other part of town is very difficult in Manhattan. You know, the traffic congestion, just the sheer amount of people on one island makes it very difficult to get around when you're young and healthy. When you're aged and debilitated, it's even that much harder, barring any elements that come in, such as rain or snow or 103-degree heat.
And the cost of car service is prohibitive, I'm sure, for many of your clients.
Enormously.
So there's really no other option for them except institutional care if you guys weren't around.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the options for our patients, you know, the patients that we see are generally the sickest patients in the Medicare program. Those who are elderly, they have three or more medical conditions that are chronic, and year over year, they just become more and more disabled. Many of them have dementia, and it's a large, huge stress on the family to figure out how are they going to access health care for mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. It gets very difficult, and it falls on the families to figure it out. And we sort of try to bridge that gap to say we can get very effective primary care in the home, and, you know, utilize the emergency services when they're true emergencies and not just for regular routine chronic care.
Some states are very restrictive on what nurse practitioners can do. And then we have states like Kentucky and West Virginia, where a lot of their population lives in rural areas. So how does the role of nurse practitioners shift when you move out of a place like Manhattan?
You know, there are many communities in northern New York, western New York, that rely on nurse practitioners for their primary care, especially when you look into those dual-eligible Medicare recipients who have Medicare and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to find a physician that will take your insurance, and oftentimes when they do, they have to travel 40, 50 miles to get there. And the nurse practitioner now is starting to become more of an option as a primary care provider around the country in a lot of underserved areas. You know, it's unfortunate that a lot of states have not sort of come together to expand the nurse practitioner's role, namely in Texas. Florida, I believe, is also very restrictive for really no reason for it. But the idea of the restriction that these states placed on them are not based on research. It's not placed on any sort of quantitative or qualitative information we have about nurse practitioners. So they're very, very archaic and behind the times as far as what the nurse practitioner is or how we're going to address primary care. But once you go out of urban areas like Manhattan, Chicago, LA, it becomes very difficult to access physicians, primary care. And oftentimes nurse practitioners do fill these roles and to sort of place unnecessary restrictions on their care that are not, you know, these restrictions are not based on research. It's unfortunate. And I think it becomes very political when it comes to the nurse practitioner's role in primary care. And thankfully, New York has recognized, you know, the value in what we do. And so far, we've filled the need.
Since you brought up political, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about what's going on in Washington right now.
I'm not sure if Washington knows what's going on in Washington right now.
But in terms of the proposed cuts to Medicaid, which will affect things like home and community-based services and mm-hmm. nursing home reimbursement to primary care providers, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, it's difficult. You know, you do have most of the Medicaid, or I should say all of the Medicaid patients that I sort of come in contact with are typically the dual eligibles, people who have Medicare, and they've just lived beyond their means. I should say they've lived beyond what they saved for. And most people don't expect to live to 101. And, you know, when you're 90 and you realize I need, or my mother or my grandmother is going to need more and more help, we want to keep her at home. Oftentimes, those are the patients we deal with that have Medicaid. And, you know, it's interesting when you look at the proposed cuts, there's a new proposed cut every week. So I'm not even sure if we even know what is on the table at this point for proposed cuts for Medicaid, because it is a state-to-state basis. It's really not a Medicare like a national platform. Mm-hmm. That each state, you know, will have the ability to, you know, withdraw, add, you know, the patients that we see that have Medicaid, you know, they need it. But unfortunately, Medicaid no longer reimburses the Medicare secondary payment for house calls. So essentially what, you know, Medicaid has told providers who want to see dual eligibles is to say, listen, we want you to see these patients. They're super sick. They're high emergency room utilizers. We want you to save money by keeping them at home. That being said, we won't pay you for it. So unfortunately, you know, we're now faced with the idea of just not being, as a small business, essentially, being unable to take any new Medicaid patients. And I think, you know, when you see in the papers, you know, doctors are not taking Medicare, it's often looked at as the physician being the bad guy, but it's Medicaid saying we don't value what you do. We want to save money, and we feel the best way to do that is to just not pay you. Not even a small amount, just zero. So
this sounds so counterintuitive, because the only other option is to put people who are 100 years old and can't stay at home because they can't pay for it into a nursing home, which Medicaid does pay for.
That would be the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is when you do have these folks that are in the community and we can't service them anymore and they're three stories up, who's going to take care of them? Well, it's going to be the emergency room. And, you know, unfortunately, these patients, you know, that they're usually the sickest patients. They have a ton of paperwork that's required when you have people on Medicaid. You know, every single thing needs a prior authorization, and it's quite a hassle. So most providers say, you know what, I have a mortgage and a med school to pay off. I can't possibly take these patients and expect to pay my employees for free care. So it's difficult. And what's worst case scenario is that these folks that are homebound, and there's thousands of them just in New York City alone, that they're going to be utilizing the emergency room. They don't have an option. And then an emergency room, they won't be able to go home because they still don't have any care. And then they wind up utilizing the ER services, the hospital services, rehab services, and it's going to bankrupt them.
It just seems cruel.
It is, you know, and I think patients don't understand that, you know, when they say, well, I have Medicare and Medicaid, I have insurance. It's sort of like being on a desert island with a can of food and no can opener. It doesn't matter. You know, you have this insurance that no one will take because there's no reimbursement rate.
And yet we have this whole wave of people that are living past 85 mm-hmm. with multiple chronic conditions, who are the very people that need the kind of services you're talking about.
Correct. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that, you know, initially when Medicaid would cover the 20%, it was fine. But, you know, unfortunately for dual eligibles, they're just not doing it for our practice. So for us, you know, we service about 200 patients with Medicare and Medicaid. And at some point, what do we do with them if we can't see them? That's 200 patients now that, you know, good luck, guys.
And if you multiply that by the dozens and dozens of practices around the country, you're talking about millions of people.
Yeah, and billions of dollars. So the thing is, you know, I believe this is in New York. And yeah, in other states, it might be different because it is state to state. Medicaid did have a program where they said they would pay the full 20%, but that the patient could not be followed by a nurse practitioner as their primary care provider. It had to be a physician. So we sort of said, well, you know, you've just passed a law to make nurse practitioners independent in an effort to increase access to those very patients. You've now just said, we won't honor the nurse practitioner as a primary care provider. There's just an awful lot of mixed messages in Albany. I wouldn't even say Washington, because this is a New York State issue.
Right.
And I think as a nurse practitioner, you're sort of left to be very perplexed as to say, do you want us to meet the primary care gap or do you not? And if you do not, that's fine, but don't put these superfluous laws on the books and then, you know, choke off the reimbursement, because you understand that that's a direct link to how you're going to increase access.
As a state, as a city, how do we deal with this? What do we do? What can people do?
I mean, I think, you know, we need to understand, you know, who the sick patients are, who are those patients that are driving costs. I can tell you in my own practice, they're usually those folks that are elderly. They've got 3, 4, 5 different chronic medical conditions. They're taking 10 or more medications a day that are going to be high utilization of emergency rooms and hospitals. And I really feel that's where the money is getting drained. When you look at, you know, institutional spending, if we're serious about improving primary care, you know, it's a great buzzword around Albany and Washington, but nobody actually respects it, because you can see it in the reimbursement rates. That if we were to view it as we do specialists, I think you would have a lot more providers who would be interested in primary care. You know, typically, you know, you'll have 7 to 8 different doctors managing the same patient on so many medications, but because nobody wants to deal with the reimbursement rates of being a primary care provider, nobody steps up. I think that you have that what must happen is an increase in primary care spending, and a meaningful increase, especially with Medicare, is expecting the providers to start providing more quality information. You know, we need to have significant, serious discussions about how are we going to incentivize doctors and nurse practitioners to continue to become primary care providers. Because expecting people to do it out of the goodness of their heart is not going to drive a healthcare system.
And Medicare now, or Congress, is actually talking about cutting some of the reimbursement again.
Yeah, I mean, it's every year. And I mean, at some point, you know, Medicare is going to become Medicaid. And nobody wants it. Nobody wants to deal with the headache. And it's unfortunate, you know, that you do have people making laws, rules, and suggestions about how to improve the program who've never seen a patient. They don't have Medicare themselves. And they're, so they're subject to none of the laws that they're passing. Makes it very difficult for a provider to sort of, okay, guys, this year we're going to do it this way. Next year we're going to do it this way. You know, I can say over the last three years, I've seen more changes to the Medicare program than I have in the last 16 years that I've been doing this. And, you know, what they've done, they've sort of created a system of checkboxes. And, you know, when people complain that they go to their doctor's office because the doctor just stands there in front of the computer, you know, that's Medicare's expectation of the primary care provider today, is to check the right boxes, say the right words, and we'll reimburse you.
So what would your message be to somebody that wants to get into hands-on care? And there's, why choose becoming a nurse practitioner over becoming a primary care doctor?
You know, I'll tell you, I mean, that's a very personal decision a lot of people have. It's kind of hard. It's a hard question to answer. I do feel that it's all about your why. Why do you want to do something? If somebody wants to become a primary care doctor to make money, it's not that you're not going to, but that can't be the reason you do it. Otherwise, you're going to have a very miserable life. You know, there is definitely a monetary issue, you know, that I'm not $200,000 in med school debt, but yet I prescribe, diagnose, and treat in my own practice for the last 15 years. So if what I want to do is to offer primary care, make a difference, which I enjoy my work, I very much enjoy my profession, I think the nurse practitioner model is a very nice model. I think it's different than the physician assistant model in a sense that you do get more autonomy. You do have sort of a different training than you do in most other professions. You know, and the nursing profession is the largest profession in medicine. You know, we represent the largest portion of medical care in hospitals, outpatient, in the community. You know, nursing is a huge influence in the shaping of healthcare. So for me, it was really not about wanting to start a career at the age of 35, 40, when I'm finally out of school, to do what I'm doing currently today, and, you know, quite happy and enjoying doing what I'm doing. But I think those going into the profession now, you know, when I graduated, it was 2001. And, you know, the iPhone wasn't developed yet. And so it was just, I hate to say, always date myself. It was a different world, you know, but it was a different world. it was a different time and it was a lot simpler. And today, you know, I think younger folks getting into healthcare have to speak to those people who are currently doing it. And I would hope that those who are currently doing it wouldn't say, don't do it. I would never say that to anybody, but they need to know the truth. They need to know what's out there and they need to know the reality of the world they're stepping into. And it's not for everybody. I love the nurse practitioner profession and I feel it's the future of primary care. I think when I started this in 2001, people thought I was nuts, that I was dangerous, crazy to be doing this without a physician over my shoulder. But you know, we've done about 40,000 house calls in that time and, you know, and we deliver a pretty good product.
Well, and I'm sure to your patients, you are their lifeline because without you, they'd either be in a hospital emergency department or in some kind of institution.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like to be as self-absorbed as to be able to say that, but I mean, I guess it's true. You know, we do offer them a lifeline and not even just them, but the families as well. You know, we get emails from daughters and sons and grandsons and nieces and nephews all the time to say, hey, you know, my mother feels this way. What should we do? Had I not existed, what would they do? 911. And, you know, who does that really help? So I like to think that, you know, while we're a small practice, we see about 500 patients. You know, we're not a large institution. But I think we're doing our part, you know. And I would think that if nurse practitioners wanted to get into what I'm doing, I think it would be a blessing. And I think that states need to take off the handcuffs to allow them to do it. I live in New Jersey, and I would love to start offering this service in New Jersey, but I can't, you know, because the scope of practice laws here are pretty restrictive.
Dennis, if somebody wants to get in touch with you and find out more about your services, how can they do that?
Sure. Well, in today's day and age, there's a whole host of ways. We do have a website. It's medhousecalls.com. And that pretty much has all the information about us, my practice, pictures of us, and also our office number is 212-980-4294. And happy to answer any questions, any concerns that anybody would have. You know, we're always around.
Dennis, thank you very much. We don't know what the future of Medicaid or Medicare will look like, but we do know that without access to primary care, those who need it most may have to do without. And that's only going to end up costing the system and all of us a lot more. For HealthCetera, I'm Liz Siegert.